Hi, everybody. Magna, Jason. Have a moment of silence real quick. Pray how you pray by yourself. I'm going to pray again, because I already prayed once, and try to push me aside here, because I'm the messenger, not the message. Topic is men's rap, and last night I've been trying not to think about this since I got asked to share, and last night I was all up in my head with a bunch of other stuff. I'll get into that stuff in a minute, but basically, like, I was telling myself, I had myself to the point where I needed to get here and, like, be like, find someone else to do it, or, you know, try to pass the buck, because I didn't feel as though I was qualified to share, like, my experience, strength, and hope on a topic like men's rap. I'm taking the topic for what it is. It's kind of open, but I think for a men's rap, let's talk about, like, men-related issues. I was just talking with someone before the meeting started, and explained some of the things that I've been going through lately, and how they kind of really fit in with, a men's rap and, like, men-related issues, and how, like, I got asked to share on this, and I didn't even know at the time I was asked that I'd be going through the things that I'm going through now. I'll start, like, I guess, qualify myself. I said I'm an addict, used for like 10 years, don't want to get into all the stories, but one substance wasn't my problem. My problem was more, and my drug of choice is whatever you had. I was never fully self-supporting. I always accepted donations. And if there were no donations coming in, I would go take the donations, basically. I found recovery January 4th of 2006, and I've been clean since January 6th of 2006. And another thing that I wanted to point out, just to show how this program can work in all areas of my life and anything that I'm going through. Tomorrow, I'll be celebrating 9 days clean from nicotine. And that's all a direct result of, practicing a first step and then getting help along the way. Now, going back to some of the issues that I've been going through lately, like I said, I didn't expect some of the things that I've been going through with myself to be going on whenever I got asked. Whenever I got asked to share on this topic, I was on cloud nine, basically. I had that thing outside me that was making me feel good, not in a substance, but in a person who was particularly a female. And, that was kind of the thing that helped me not focus on me. And that worked for a little bit. Eventually, I obviously got emotionally attached. We were really good friends before that even came about, and we broke up 2 weeks ago. So the past few weeks I've been feeling, which I'm sure you guys all know that sometimes feeling isn't good. sometimes it is. I feel glad to be here, and I feel as though, like, I've needed to be here throughout these past 2 weeks. I've been waiting for today to come so I could be surrounded with love and people who genuinely care about me. But the past 2 weeks, I've been forced to focus on myself. And I don't want to do that. My first instinct is to find something else to make me feel good. And like I said last night, I was real psyched out because I was hanging out with some friends, and the town that I live in is a college town, okay? Now, anybody that knows the college schedule, school starts Monday. So all these students are coming back in town, and, you know, there's me not feeling too good out with my buddies and seeing all these girls walking around and all these people going in and out of bars, and it looked pretty appealing at that time last night. I kept telling them, like, I want to smoke a cigarette. I want to smoke a cigarette. Like, I just wanted to get away from the way that I was feeling, because the way that I feel is, you know, feeling the way where I want to use something, and, like, sometimes actually giving in to that way, I'm condemning myself with my own guilt. And, you know, talks about that in Who is an Addict. It says we are condemned by our own guilt. I'm like, that's something that I'm going through right now. Why? Because I am an addict, appropriately in that chapter. And, like, to my understanding right now about, like, guilt and shame, someone told me once, like, guilt is the action and shame is the feeling, and that kind of made a lot of sense to me because, you know, I had been guilty before and sentenced. And, the shame that I felt from that is, it kept me trapped. I was condemned by my own mind. And because of all those actions, I eventually developed a belief system where, like, that was my life and that's all that there ever was. But today I know that that's not the way it has to be. Going into, like, myself and what I've uncovered through some step work, going into those belief systems and faulty belief systems, like, whenever I was using, all I ever thought was, like, you know, I'm a high school dropout, I don't have any family anymore, so, like, I'm pretty much by myself, and all I knew how to do at that time was get high. I knew how to, like, manipulate all those things. And because that's all I ever knew, that's all I ever wanted to do, and that's all I ever believed there was for me. Now, whenever I came into Narcotics Anonymous, I heard people talk about they knew how I felt because that's where they had been, you know. And like they say, 90 meetings in 90 days. You know, I did that, and eventually, sometime along that 90-day period, you know, every meeting I heard, you never have to use again, keep coming back, and eventually I heard it enough that I started believing it, you know, and I eventually realized after those drugs had been out of my system for so long, like, the damage that it had done, and the result of putting that first one in me. Now, going back to, like, how I've been feeling lately, I've felt like this before. In recovery. And it was before, like, I had some of the steps that I have under my belt now in me, and some of the things that I know and actually, like, computed, listened to. Because I'm sure I've heard it before, but I didn't listen. You know, I was talking to someone last night, and they were going through all their problems, which was kind of funny because I could relate to all of them. And I don't know where I said, you can hear things, but are you listening? Like, I can hear it, and it can go through, or I can listen and keep it in there. And after I started doing that, I started developing some skills, and, like, going into, you know, first step, we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. I don't really like that word, admit. That's just me. I can, you know, I've admitted to lots of people, I need $20 because I need to get to Pittsburgh because my cousin's in the hospital because he's got cancer. And, you know, that was a true statement besides the fact that I had to get to Pittsburgh. Like, I admitted that to people. but it was like, you know, stretched a little bit. So, like, a word that I like is, like, believe, or I, you know, understand. Like, I know deep down inside of me that if there's something outside of me that makes me feel good, and I use that something, I'm going to want to do it again. Like, another thing that I've been going through lately, I've been addicted to this video game. Okay. I got to bring this in there because I've been talking about it lately. And, you know, where I'm at in my step work right now, I'm writing about failure. Now, if I lose at this video game, I want to go back and, like, because it's an online game. You got to understand, it's an online game. You're playing against people all over. And if I lose, I want to go back and prove that, not prove, but get the feeling of winning so that losing feeling goes away, you know. Vice versa, if I win, I want to go back again to get that feeling, you know. And that I've realized that the whole addiction to that video game is based on the way that it makes me feel. When I can, I don't have to go like up and down from one extreme to the other through using that thing. If I simply just admit that I'm powerless and believe that I'm powerless and practice that powerlessness with acceptance and just don't touch it. But it's funny because, like, I've probably deleted the game like 30 times off my computer, and I'll think, I can use it just once. Like, that's the stuff that runs through my head. So I'll put it back on there. But, you know, with going along the lines of, like, a substance, like, you know, I said that I put the nicotine down. I know from experience, like, just trying to quit something and thinking I can use it one more time, that one more time isn't one more time, you know. It happens a lot of times. It's easy to see, you know, and I'm sure once I say the word, you guys can think about all the stuff I just said, unmanageability. Anytime I let something like that control my life, it just causes me to put aside all the things that I need to do. I have a shirt at home that says, Top 10 Reasons I Procrastinate, Number 1. And that's all it says. And the number one reason for me of why I procrastinate is because I let my emotions run my actions rather than my intellect run my actions. I can know something is wrong for me, but if it makes me feel good, I'm going to put that... I choose to put that in front of what I know is right. And, you know, I think addicts are some of the smartest people on the face of the earth. The only people that I know that could fix a TV with stuff in their kitchen. You know? Can make some crazy contraptions. But I can only speak on my experience. Like, I tend to not use that thinking process. You know, I put whatever makes me feel good. But going into like the second step with now I'm talking about the steps basically because I believe, you know, the word step, I use the acronym solution to every problem, because if I'm practicing those steps, I notice that I don't have as many problems as whenever I'm not. So that's like a belief. I was talking about belief structures earlier. Second step, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Like, I didn't understand the power of belief for a while. And I still don't understand it fully. You know, I'm always looking for those things that can help me grow. But what I'm starting to understand is no matter what my belief system is, I'm always going to act on it. Just like I was saying before, if I believe that the only thing in my life that is there for me is for me to get high and manipulate and lie and cheat and steal, that's all I'm ever going to do. So like I said, coming to those 90 meetings, I eventually developed this belief system that I didn't have to use anymore. And once I realized I didn't have to use anymore, and then I felt shitty, I started hearing other things that kind of related to that, like, well, you don't have to live in this suffering. Pain is inevitable and suffering is optional. And, you know, once I realized that that help was available to me, I started acting on it in, like, little bits. It's like this big wall's in front of me, and I take this little pick and just keep every, like, suggestion that I take and everything that I start applying to my life, I'm picking away at that little wall. And that wall is how active the disease is in my life. It's not as active today as it used to be. And it varies from day to day. But, you know, I'm not... I'm continually becoming the man that I always wanted to be. My belief system of what a man was back in active addiction is, like, completely different than what it is today. It's not about the bling bling. It's not about the swing swing, I've heard people term it as. But, you know, like, what being a man to me is today is simply integrity. And that's all through, like, coming to an understanding of how these steps work in my life. The literature talks about integrity is the only spiritual principle that we have in this program that is actually practiced by practicing all of the other spiritual principles. I think it says that in It Works How and Why in, like, tradition 11. But, somewhere in tradition 7. But, for me to practice that integrity, and, like, integrity to me is doing the right thing for the right reason, practicing honesty, even if honesty isn't, like, what everyone wants to hear, you know, people-pleasing, compromising my belief system and what I think is right for the sake of other people so they, you know, accept me. I did bring up this pamphlet, Self-Acceptance. I read it the other day and it, like, took more meaning. Hey. I was welcoming you. There was a woman sitting in here earlier and I wasn't sure if she was going to stick around, but I was going to say to her, like, well, no, you're welcome. Stay here. Although this is a men's wrap, this is Narcotics Anonymous, before the men's wrap, you know. We're all welcome here. So, but she left. She must not have felt that. No, I can't speak on behalf of her, but... self-acceptance. There's something that I pulled out of here that I never pulled out of here before through this past week. Self-acceptance permits bounce in our recovery. I always hear people, like, bring up bounce, and I always hear people bring up their problems. Like, I'm starting to understand what this whole program is about, and, like, I've been practicing it in the past week, but I had been practicing it before that. In the introduction, it says that based on our experience, we believe that every addict, including the potential addict, suffers from an incurable disease of body, mind, and spirit. We were in the grip of a hopeless dilemma, the solution of which is spiritual in nature. Then it goes, in Who is an Addict, it talks about how we were always looking for that person, that place, or that thing to fill that void, you know. That void to me, I like to term it as a God-sized void that only God can fill. But no matter how I feel, I'm always looking for something to hold on to. And I'm starting to understand how much more, like, that thing that I'm trying to hold on to, I can't physically hold on to. And that's what I've been trying to do. And that's what I still do, but I'm getting better at not doing that. A good example of like what I'm talking about is, you know, we got this room here, okay? And we got these lights. Now, there is something that none of us can see coming into this room that make these lights work. It's electricity, right? What happens whenever you take that electricity out of the room? There's no lights. So the thing that we have here, this physical object that has a purpose to bring light into this room, without that unseen thing, the purpose is kind of like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if we have them here. It's like if I had like this big screen TV at home with this huge surround sound system, without that unseen thing, the purpose of that, you know, thing that everyone thinks is so important doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. If I don't pay the electric bill, it's not going to work. So how I pay my electric bill? Pray. You know, I have to hold on to those things that I can't see. And that belief system, I have to have that belief system internal. Just like if I believe that I couldn't stop using drugs, I'm going to continue using drugs. If I believe that these character defects that keep manifesting themselves in my life can be removed, I believe they're going to be removed. And I'm kind of jumping from like everywhere, but it's just, you know, it's flowing. It's not me. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. That power for me in the beginning was everyone here. You know, I kept saying earlier about how those things that I kept hearing, you don't have to use. You don't have to suffer like this. It gets better. Once that thing that was greater than me, I started listening and started internalizing it, became my belief structure. say we all got into a boxing ring. You guys were all on one end, and I was in the other by myself. Who do you think would win that match? You guys, right? You guys are definitely greater than me then. And that a power greater than myself can be so many things in my life. I like to like point out education. Through God's grace and the miraculous program, I'm starting college in 2 days. You know, I dropped out of high school. I believed that there was nothing for me in life besides lying, cheating, stealing. But eventually I believed like I can do something with my life, and I'm doing it. From that simple belief that I could do something. That belief, which is unseen, manifested itself physically in my life. And it actually became real. It became physical. Could restore us to sanity. I like in there how it says could, because that implies a choice. Lately, I haven't been choosing to do that. But it's a choice. Could restore me to sanity. To be restored to sanity. Anybody remember whenever they were sane at one point? I personally can. It was like way back when. Way, way, way back when. And eventually, like, just from things happening in my life, and, you know, I can't realize, like, I'm still like a child. And how do children learn to talk? How do children learn to walk? How do children learn that their mother is like the person that nurtures them? They observe their surroundings and they eventually like internalize it, you know? And after having all these like false things coming in around me, by the time I got here, all these things that I had in my head about how life was completely wrong. So if everything that I knew for like so long was wrong, that means I didn't know anything about the way things really are. So it's like I'm starting out like a child again, you know. And I wanted to bring up the triangle of self-obsession with me, but I left it at home. It talks about that. It talks about like the self-centered nature of a child and how through growing up over the years, children usually lose that, like, self-centered nature, but we tend to, like, hold on to it. But again, my belief today is the steps are the solution to every problem. The only way I'm ever going to get away from that self-centered nature is to, work the first three steps, develop a strong foundation, as it talks about in the third step, and it works how and why. So the first three steps are the solid foundation for the rest of our recovery. So, once I develop that and realize, like, I'm not in control as much as I try to be, because I still try to control things so bad. But eventually, once I believe, like, that this can work for me, I can learn about my steps through steps 4 through 9, and then, with the help of God, remove all those things that I don't like about me, and then eventually carry the message to everyone else. Fix up the past, carry the message. I don't know whenever I'm supposed to stop here, so just, like the gong show. What I learned through the third step, I'll go into that a little bit. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over care of God as we understood Him. I really complicated that step. I thought I had to be perfect. I thought I had to be God on earth, and not act out on all these things that I do. And what I really found out, like, the best way for me to practice that third step decision is to work the rest of the steps. Saying that goes around, 3 frogs in a log, 1 made a decision to jump off, how many frogs are left? 3, because 1 only made a decision. He didn't actually do it. So the rest of the steps are 4. But, I see working the rest of the steps as, turning my will over, because, I want to get away from all these things that I do and act as God would want me to act, and my life over, because, once I start doing this and once I start becoming more God-centered than self-centered, God's going to work in all the areas in my life that I turn over. So that's just how I see it. And I love that third step prayer. I say it every morning. And it keeps getting better. I mean, that's all I can really say. That's my experience, strength, and hope right now. Like I said, I got clean January 6th. I only have about, I have 20 months clean, which is a miracle. And, I heard someone say to me, well, I was talking to someone once. They said, somebody with 2 days can be a predecessor. Someone with 2 days can show that guy with 1 day how to make coffee. It can show him how to hug. A real hug. Not that, like, not like a warm, juicy ass hug. So, like, I'm starting to, like, just, I'm at the point in my recovery where I'm really starting to understand a lot of things about how, like, physical things and how I chase them are really my downfall. And that you can't fix a spiritual void with a physical solution. The solution is spiritual. It's unseen. And the only way that I can develop that unseen thing in my life so it continues to work more and more is by working on it. No one ever said recovery was easy. Sometimes it sucks. But I'm always grateful. Like, no matter what, I always have something to be grateful for. I'm grateful that I'm not using. I'm grateful that I'm not in the hellhole and around the shitty people that I used to be. I'm grateful I have a life today. I'm grateful I am starting, like, the path of getting a degree, because by me never believing that I could do it, that it never let me. But I know today the person that I was isn't the person I am today. Just for today, I'm a recovering addict. You know, I was talking about integrity. That's what I want in my life. Straight up. Like I said about the guilt condemning me. Whenever I practice the principles, I don't have that guilt in my life. But the only way that I can practice the principles is through the power, unseen powerful force in my life, God. Because from experience with, a lot of people can relate to this, you know, I prayed in the beginning because they told me to pray to like get that obsession and compulsion removed, because I didn't want to live that life anymore, and it's not there. I don't have the obsession and compulsion to get high anymore. That's a miracle. I guess I don't know where I'm supposed to go from here, so I guess that means that I'm not supposed to go anywhere. So, thanks for listening. I was here for me. I could tell you all that, but thanks for being a part of my recovery.
Thank you. And I'd like to introduce our second speaker, John M.
Hello, everybody. I'm John. I'm a drug addict. From the Tri-County area of Southern Maryland. It's good to be here. They asked me to talk at the men's wrap at the last minute, and I'm not one of them guys that try to think out what I say. I just kind of say what I know and what my experience is and what my story is. And it's important for me to remember where I come from, because some wise people once said, if we don't remember where we come from, we're condemned to go back there. And I did my last shot of dope in the parking lot of a local mall, September 5th, 1986, at 3 o'clock in the morning. The next day I went into a rehab, and I haven't been blessed at that time to have what I like to call a window of grace, an opportunity to not have to use again. A lot of people say that like they're, God like blessed them where they don't have to use, and if that's your experience, that's cool with me. I try not to get into that, but I just don't believe God says to some people, look, you get to recover and live a life beyond your wildest dreams, and you're condemned to die with the disease of addiction. I don't think it works that way. I think God gives us all, a window of grace, an opportunity, just, a small place in time where we have a choice whether we want to continue to do what we've been doing or take this opportunity and listen and learn a new way to live. And that's what happened to me. That was my experience. I had a little window of grace and opportunity, and I continue to hold on to that opportunity and continue to try. Like my man was saying, if we have a disease, it involves much more than the use of drugs. Certainly the solution involves much more than just not using. And I know this is a men's rap, and people usually like to talk about sexuality or relationships and all that stuff. And I don't believe we're that much different than they are. We're all people with a spiritual malady, somehow. It says in that my favorite pamphlet, The Triangle Self-Obsession, is that when we come up, we're really, really relying on our parents, and that as we grow and we outgrow that, we learn to rely on ourselves, and then we realize that we can't meet our spiritual needs through self, and we learn to rely on a power greater than ourselves. But us as addicts, we tend to miss that step, and we tend to hold on. And us as men, where we do differ is that I believe we have larger egos. And the ego is like a big part of our disease, because what it is, it's the opposite of being God-reliant. And it's more about being self-reliant. And a lot of you who know me know I'm real big on feelings, and my default feeling is apathy. When I don't know what to feel, I just don't give a shit. That can be dangerous too, but once I go into that apathy, it usually turns to fear. It's like just my default. It's when a lot of people, when they're raised up, they're taught how to function in the world physically, how to get a job and make money, and they're taught how to function in the world mentally and be able to use basic skills of arithmetic and stuff to get through life. But they're also trained and taught how to deal with the world on a spiritual matter, how to, you know, practice things like acceptance and tolerance and patience. And I wasn't ever taught any of those things. So I went through life not knowing anything about that last part in our threefold disease, which is physical, mental, and spiritual. And most people get the physical part right away. They realize that I can't continue to use, and they put the drugs down. And some of us will go on to the mental aspect of the disease, which is that fixed idea going back over and over again that looks like compulsion and obsession. It makes us want to continue to use, and a lot of us get that part, and we stay clean for periods of time. But it's the third part that really escapes a lot of people, and that's the spiritual part of our disease. And that's what separates recovery from advanced recovery. That's what separates people from just not using and people who are in recovery. And like my man said, the solution's in the steps. We have a disease that's spiritual in nature, so we have to have a spiritual solution. And I really want to get back on fear, because that's what I wanted to talk about. And that's where my disease lies, is fear. And I was told a long time ago that's defined as either losing something we think is ours or not getting something we think we need. And through a whole bunch of situations that I'm not going to get into as a child, I was left with these feelings as a small child of not being enough, of not counting, not mattering, not having any value. And I also was raised, I was poor, I was a poor kid. I was raised in a home, and then when I got with some parents, we were poor. I mean, not poor like I had to like get free lunches at school. I mean, poor like no electricity, no running water, poor. And it left me with these feelings of scarcity and lack. There was never enough of anything in my home when I came up. There wasn't enough food. There wasn't enough attention. There wasn't enough love. There wasn't enough of anything. And I took those feelings, along with the other feelings I had, that I wasn't enough, that I didn't matter, I was unwanted, all these feelings that I had got when I was a child. And I took them into like my young adult, like 8 or 9 years old. And I always felt different. I felt like somehow I was inherently something was wrong with me, that I didn't fit. I just didn't fit anywhere. And all I really wanted was to fit. I just wanted someone, you know, just to say that I was okay. And I wanted to feel okay. And that's how I started using. There was a group of people who used, and they invited me to use, and it was the first time I'd ever invited to anything in my life, because I was a dirty kid. I didn't bathe, and I didn't get haircuts, and I was picked on all the time. And these people wanted me. And they said, "Do you do that?" And I said, "Hey, I do that, you know, whatever, you know." I often say if they were Satanists out there slaying dogs, I'd be a dog slayer, just the way it was. Got involved in that, but that's how I started using. But what I realized is why I continued to use is that I still had all these old feelings that I developed as a child, all the scarcity and lack, and that I needed, you know, to be self-reliant, that I didn't have room for God in my life. Most guys that were raised on the street know the deal about we're all hard as nails. You got to be. It's a survival tool. You don't trust, you know. I like to think about it. I never sat around a fire barrel passing a bottle of wine asking my buddy, "How do you feel today?" It just didn't happen like that for me. I was just stuck with my own feelings, my own thoughts, and my own inadequate self. And being a man, I developed an ego to counteract all this fear I had. I grew my hair real long and got earrings and tattoos and wore a leather jacket and carried a little pistol, and everybody said, "Stay away from that guy, he's crazy. You don't want to fuck with him," you know? And the truth was, man, is that I was just a scared little boy, and I just wanted everybody to leave me alone. And so I put on that persona, I put on that mask, and people thought I was crazy and they left me alone. And it wasn't easy learning that reputation. I got several broken bones, 5 missing teeth, whatever else you want to know, just having to take on big guys so that people would leave me alone. Because I was so scared of everybody. Fear ran my life. I was fear-based in nature. I continued to use to cover up this fear. I was afraid of the dark. People thought that I was like 10 feet tall and bulletproof, and the real deal was if somebody came by and blew on me, I'd fall over. So when I got recovery, which is a whole other story in itself, this window of grace. After I stayed clean for a while, it says in the book somewhere that most of us will go back to using because we're stuck with all these feelings of not using. And I was stuck with all these feelings. I still felt inadequate. I still was full of fear. The only difference is I was clean. I still didn't know anything about having God in my life or having spirituality in my life, how to rely on that process, how to rely on that power, how to use that power adequately. And I just white-knuckled it and held my spiritual breath for a while and went on the best I could in recovery. And I got a sponsor, and he introduced me to the steps. He introduced me to the solution. And taught me about, first thing I had to do was learn to trust, part of deflating ego. This is an ego deflating process. And we all know what happens when we trust on the street. You know, the guy says, give me your money, I'll be right back. And, you know, you're still on that corner 2 days later and the guy ain't coming. And, you know, or you might have had relatives that trusted you with other parents, and maybe you got molested, maybe you got abused as a child, maybe you got hit, I don't know, whatever your thing was. But we all know what trust leads to. And trust for me came in some real small bunches, man. I remember giving him just a little bit, and I remember like waiting like a month and not hearing it from anybody. And I felt like maybe I could give him a little more, and in return he gave me some. He gave me some of his secrets, and I developed, that was the first relationship I developed to trust with my sponsor. And as we started working steps 1, 2, and 3, and we got into the process of developing this relationship with a higher power, that was the first hurdle I had to overcome, was learning to trust in this power. And I remember him saying, you can use this power long before you understand it, and all you have to do is trust. Just try to trust. First, second step, just try to trust. You don't really even have to trust. You know what I mean? And then the commitment we made in the third step of trusting that power. And again, easing myself out of self, deflating the ego, overcoming the fear of life. So that's what it says in the steps, is if we do this program right, we'll overcome our fear of life. And I'm going to be honest with you, I'll be celebrating 21 years here in a couple weeks, and I still have a big fear of life. I'm still scared of the dark. I still have times where I think, like, fear can overwhelm me. It's not an easy process, but I've gotten a lot better through a lot of work, through working a lot of steps, through reading a lot of literature, and through practice in this process of recovery. Because it didn't come for me like where I read a step and boom, I was fixed. Nobody came up and hit me with a recovery stick and said, boom, you're going to be better here. It didn't happen like that. It happened through little chunks, little pieces, a lot of mistakes, a lot of learning lessons that I had to carry into my life, not just in the rooms, man, but learning how to be, you stay around here long enough, life still happens. You still advance in your career and maybe get promoted and maybe go back to school and maybe get a degree and maybe have kids and maybe get divorced and maybe get married again and get divorced and have kids and all the stuff I've done in recovery, you know what I mean? You stay around here, life happens and you learn lessons. And if you're not spiritually equipped, life can throw a curveball at you. It's hard to deal, you know, for a guy like me, who didn't have any spiritual training as a child, to try not only to grow in recovery, but I was 22 years old when I got clean, and I had to learn to grow up in here, and I had to learn basic skills like when my boss yelled at me, I couldn't tell him to stick it up his ass because I needed a job. I had to learn that by telling a boss to stick it up his ass and going hungry for a while. You know? That every time my wife said, hey, do this, I couldn't just say, that's woman's work, you do it, because then I was divorced. You know? And I had to learn all this stuff in here, and a lot of it the hard way. None of it came easy for me. But I learned, and I learned how to develop, through working the steps and developing a relationship with God, as I understand it, and I know a lot of people get freaked out about God in here, and that, it freaks me out. You know, I don't want to be offensive, but I'm just speaking for me, but I'm not a Christian, and it's real hard for me to, like, get on board with that whole mentality. And but it says in the book that we don't have to be. That all we got to do is find a power that we understand, that we rely on, that works for us, and I've been able to do that. I've been able to not only develop this relationship, but use this power. Even though I still don't quite understand it. And through doing that, through being more God-reliant, the fear has slowly come away from me, allowing me to be a productive human being, giving me what I really always wanted when I got here, man. I didn't come here because I thought if I got clean, I would be rich and have all these material things, man. All I really wanted to do was be reasonably comfortable in my own skin. I just wanted to be me, you know? And for me, it's a long process. It doesn't have to be for you. But it was like when I had 15 years clean, I remember reading in the book, and I read the book a million times before that. But like you say, every time you pick up the book, sometimes at different phases in the recovery, stuff will jump out at you. But I remember reading it. It said the real value is in being ourselves. For years, I wanted to be anybody but me. For years, I was everybody but me. I wore masks. I was afraid, so I puffed my little chest out, never smiled, and it's still a bad habit I have. I still carry a lot of that, and I don't mean to, but it's just the process of living on the streets, that taught me this ego thing that, and what I'm learning is that it's really okay just to be vulnerable. It's really okay for people to talk bad about me. It's really okay for people that used to hate me and call me names because I don't use. And all that's really okay with me because I like me. The real value is in being myself. The real value is in first the process of accepting self, which was not easy for me, but that was a process that I feel pretty comfortable with. And I'm really okay with me. And the way I got okay with me was by working steps 4, 5, 6, and 7 and understanding who I really am, that I ain't all that. But I ain't all that either. I just am. I'm just another human being doing the very best I can with the tools that were given, like playing golf with a handicap. You know what I mean? I had a bad childhood, poor, pitiful, picked on, put upon me. And I can either play that tape through or I can say, that was yesterday, today's today, and go forward and understand who I am and take a look around me at other people and try not so much to gauge where I am, because recovery's taught me not to compare my outside to other people's outside. And I catch myself doing that because of my come from. Once again, I'm a guy who never had nothing, man. I was picked on. And sometimes I want to say, look at this. I got all this material stuff, I just want to and that's most relevant, and I'll share this on a personal level, is my mother died last week, and that was again, my default mode is apathy. I don't know what to think because my mother wasn't really available for me and I have all these issues with her. But she died, so I don't know what to think. So I go into, I don't give a shit. But I do. I care. I'm a caring guy. It's one thing I learned. I care. Not only do I care deeply about almost everything. And so she died, and I have some family that I'm estranged from that I really don't get along with that well. And they're all practicing addicts. And so they find out that when she's in hospice and she's getting ready to die, that you can stay in this hotel for free because your family member's dying. So they all move in like the Beverly Hillbillies, you know what I mean? All of them in there. And they get in a fist fight drunk 12 o'clock at night and they all get kicked out. So I want to put on my surprise face. Can't believe us, My sponsor's you wouldn't say, hey, there's a monkey in a tree. Monkeys are supposed to be in trees. They're addicts. That's what's supposed to happen. So I really had to come, and one of the most important lessons I've learned in recovery, man, is that acceptance doesn't mean agreement. It just is what it is, man. That, I can say, it's wrong all I want. And my sponsor likes to remind me there's people in Iraq right now putting dynamite around their waist going, I'm right. People dying to be right. Acceptance doesn't mean agreement. They just are who they are, and it is what it is. And they did what they're supposed to do. When she died, they stole all her stuff, and they got kicked out of hospice, and one of them didn't show up at the funeral. And that's what addicts do, man. And I have to accept that. Doesn't mean I agree with it. But I brought that up because looking at them reminds me of where I came from. And I want to say, look at them sick people. And that's a bad habit I have, and I forget that they're sick. They're not bad. They're sick, man. They're doing what I used to do, man. I was worse than them. You know what I mean? Not only would I have stole all my mother's stuff, I would have, relied on some family member to feel bad for me, let me stay in their house and steal all their stuff, too. That's who I am. I'm a guy who suffers from scarcity and lack, man, for enough. There's never enough. There's never enough of nothing for a guy like me, because I'm constantly trying to fill a spiritual hole with, you know, I like to tell people I got a motorcycle-shaped hole in my heart. If I just put a motorcycle in there, I'd be okay. And I put it in there, and it didn't fix it. I put a boat in there, it didn't fix it. I put a wife in there, it didn't fix it. I put kids in there, put education, put a good job, a good salary, all that in there, none of it fixed it. You know? If you're a guy with a spiritual malady like me, and you hit the lotto, and you buy a boat and a motorcycle and a pretty woman, you're going to be a miserable guy with a nice boat and a nice motorcycle. So, my time's up, unfortunately, because I love to talk. Not that I love to talk. I love to share my passion for recovery. Recovery's been good to me, man. It's been good to me, man. For a guy like me that came from a place where I came from, man, if you don't think I'm a miracle, go look at my brothers and sisters. Okay? They're probably just getting up about now. They don't have no shirt on. They ain't showered in a couple of days. They probably don't have any shoes on. They're probably picking up beer bottles about right now. Probably digging through the ashtray to see what was left. And then hating themselves and continuing to do the same behavior so they can continue to hate themselves. Because they don't know that there's a solution. We're the blessed, most blessed people in the world because we have a solution to a problem that most people don't, half the people don't understand that it's a disease, and the other half don't know where the solution is. And the reality is that people will die tonight because they didn't get to hear our message. I'm going to share this and shut up. And I'm going to share it because it's important to me. It's something that I need to work on. And my sponsor always tells me that if you make a declaration about something, you're more likely, if you want to quit smoking, start telling people you're a non-smoker. Even if you continue to smoke, tell them, I'm a non-smoker, and it'll help you. And I need help in this area. It's that anonymity is for, at the level of press, radio, and film. We're anonymous, but we're not a secret. And if we don't tell people we recover, that we can and do recover, they won't know, and people will die. And it's important for us to take that risk sometimes and let people know, hey, I'm a recovering addict. And not project the stigma that they're going to put on that. And help save a life, man. Because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. And if we only give it away in the rooms, helping those that already got it, is it really working? We need to go out there and share this gift, man. We can and we do recover. Anyway, I'm John. Thanks for letting me share.